So you probably gathered by now, we're talking about faith, right, on this journey of Advent. So what does that have to do with earth, wind, fire, and water? We're going to look up later why the band Earth, Wind, and Fire doesn't have water, but Tyler and I have an idea. You'll hear about that later. So those are obviously elements, and elements are foundational to life. When you think about the elements, how they're a part of us, we interact with them all the time, we stand on solid ground, we breathe air, we use electricity all the time, we drink water. I mean, these are all a part of everyday life. So why are we talking about them during Advent? Because there is a reason. Because you know how we talk a lot about embodying our spirituality? And so, yeah? So I didn't see any nods. You're all like, what? No, I have never heard that before. Oh, okay, good. Practical spirituality, right? It's everyday life. And so it's how do we take these very transcendent ideas, particularly faith, right? That seems like, wow, that's something that's of the above and beyond. It's the mystery of spirit. It's the invisible. It's the belief in the invisible. It's a, now we're getting closer, right? It's the trust. It's the knowing. And it's the knowing inside of us. And then what does it look like every day to move through life as a being of faith, as somebody who's grounded in faith? So that's why we're bringing in the elements this Advent season. So while we journey through faith, we're grounding it. We're bringing in the earthiness of faith. I mean, it's kind of a natural anyway, right? We talk about mountains as symbols of faith. We say that somebody who has really strong faith is like a rock, right? They have faith like a rock. So there's already that kind of understanding, that sort of, that very earthy, strong, resilient kind of thing is something that shows up in us as a characteristic of faith, a quality of faith. So Advent, this 4 weeks before Christmas, are about preparation. And the preparation that we are doing is preparing ourselves to move toward that day on Christmas when we rebirth the Christ consciousness. Now, some of you might be saying, do we really have to do this every year? I mean, it seems like if we birth the Christ consciousness, that's enough, right? But actually what happens for us is because we are always in motion, we are always evolving, right? Not only every week toward a certain point in time, but every day, every moment, there's a constant becoming. It's a part of that divine essence of who we are, that impulse in us to reveal more of it. That's really what we're about, right? Is discarding what stands in the way and revealing more of the truth of who we are. And so the process is that, moving toward that rebirth, that thing that you carry in your own proverbial womb, that way of being, that dream that you're carrying, that something that you're letting go of, whatever it is, something is stirring in you, no doubt, because it's part of being alive. And it's becoming aware of that and coming in connection with that, that we begin to unfold our journey of faith. So faith, yes, it's markedly spiritual, essentially. It's about opening our minds to higher realms. It's about dancing in the mystery of spirit and all of that. We don't throw that out when we bring the earth piece in. We actually bring them together. It's that heaven on earth experience. It's that grounding through us experience of what faith really is and how it feels and looks and moves and speaks and acts through us. And so that earthy essence that we're bringing in helps us join then our divinity with our humanity, which which is always the journey we're also on, right? As human divine beings, it's like, what do I do with this divinity? And the divinity going, what do I do with this humanity? And it's like, this helps us, this journey of faith, and then the ones to come, peace and love and joy, help us bring it all together and live and move and have our being as a whole being. So it's this leg of Advent, this particular Sunday, that marks the time when we hear of the birth to come. We get the news of what's coming through us, what will be coming through us. So it's a big day. I'm glad you came. Is in the Christmas story, and I don't mean the one with Ralphie and the BB gun. You know, you probably know. You probably know that, right? I do mean the original Christmas story. In that story, we meet these characters. We meet Gabriel, the angel, and we meet Zechariah, the priest, and we meet Zechariah's wife, Elizabeth, and we meet Mary, who's to become Mother Mary. And the first scene that opens is a scene where Zechariah is doing his priestly duty. He's in the temple, and he's burning incense. And this is all a part of one of the rituals that he does. And so he's doing this. The townspeople are outside praying in the courtyard or the courtyard, I think, of the temple. And he's preparing the space, essentially, setting up. I mean, Charles Fillmore gets in, our co-founder, gets into the metaphysics of everything. And there's even metaphysics to burning incense. So maybe we'll talk about that on Fire Sunday, because I don't want to throw too much at you in one day. But anyway, so there's Zechariah. He's doing his priestly thing, his ritual, and then Gabriel shows up. Surprise, right? I mean, how often is it that an angel shows up to talk to you? And, well, maybe for you a lot of times, I don't know, you know? When I first said this was going to be elemental Advent, my wife Brenly said, you mean like fairies and gnomes and mermaids? I was like, oh, that would be fun, but no, that's not what I meant. We'll bring that in another time. So anyway, back to the story. So Gabriel says to Zechariah, your wife Elizabeth is going to have a child. Now, Zechariah and Elizabeth wanted to have a child a long time ago, but they're elderly now. So this is very surprising news. And so, you know, you can understand why he would be questioning it a little bit. And so he starts to question a little bit. And Gabriel's saying, she's going to give birth to this guy named John. What? That's even more astonishing to him. A baby named John, like he won't be named after me. He won't be Zechariah. That's the tradition. That's the convention. I'm the priest of the town. I need to follow the conventions, you know. He's probably thinking all this. And so it's like, okay, first of all, my wife, who's advanced in years, and it's not really possible, is pregnant. And then you're telling me she's going to birth this baby. And then we're going to name him John? So you can imagine Zechariah just starts to kind of wonder out loud, doubt out loud, you know, just kind of not so sure that this is the real deal. And he's immediately struck mute. He can't speak. Why? Because Zechariah's lack of faith has caused him to go into silence. And it's in the silence that it's one way to get us to meditate, right? It's in the silence that we'll begin to develop our faith, that we come in contact, right? We all know this, right? From even the meditation we just did or the meditation you do at home, whenever we go into those silent places, it's where we start to find ourselves again. Oh, you know, there's that presence. There's that light. There's that love. This is how I'm feeling today. This is what's going on inside of my body. We become aware. We become conscious through the process of meditation and silence. Charles Fillmore, our co-founder, loved to call it going into the silence. And so Zechariah literally is going into the silence for, he doesn't know how long. Is this going to be a permanent state? He doesn't have any idea. But couldn't we benefit from more silent time like Zechariah? I don't know. I can always benefit from more silent time. I don't know about you. So chances are you're going to have to do that on your own. You're probably not going to be struck mute. in order to force yourself into silence. So it's going to have to be a choice that you make, that I want to have a little more silence, to cultivate this awareness, this consciousness of the Christ that is coming in me, to become aware of my faith and the presence and all that comes with that practice of silence. So 6 months later in the story, we meet young Mary. Now, Mary is engaged to Joseph, as some of you probably know, and she is also visited by Gabriel, who is very busy, apparently, during this time of year, sharing the good news, the big news, right, of these births to come. And so in Mary's case, she's engaged, but she doesn't think it's possible that she could be pregnant, and yet Gabriel is there to tell her that she will have a child as well, and that she's already pregnant or that she's going to be in moments to come. And she's puzzling over how this could be possible. And then he says something even more astonishing once again. He says, you will be impregnated by the Holy Spirit. Now, you would think Mary would be like, come on, really? But Mary grew up in the temple. Mary is accustomed to the spiritual realm. It's probably more even familiar to her. And so she doesn't really doubt, because she knows how things work. She knows how guidance comes, and you follow the guidance, and good things come from following the guidance. And so when it comes again, you trust it more, and when it comes again, and pretty soon it's just the way you live. You're just the embodiment of faith. And that's essentially what Mary is like. She does question for a moment, but it's like a moment. And then she says, let it be according to your word. In Unity's Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, did you know we have one of those? Yeah, Charles Fillmore gathered together these Jewish scholars, and they looked at proper names, and they determined, they determined what these proper names were. So it makes it really fun to look at some of the stories and the people and see what they represent. And in Mary's case, it says that she represents divine motherhood, and they describe that as the brooding, nourishing element of divine mind in which spiritual ideals are brought to fruition. So the divine mind, when we talk about divine mind, we're talking about all intelligence, but we're also talking about the whole consciousness. So it's not just the brain in a human being, but it's also, you know, all of the consciousness, the mind, the heart, the body, all aspects of being. And so Mary represents then for that this nourishing element of consciousness, of divine mind, that then eventually brings to fruition the spiritual ideal we're after. Maybe it's faith for you. Maybe it's a grounded sense of faith, or just a grounding or a centering, or maybe it's something entirely different for you. But whatever it is, there is a coming toward that fruition of what it is that we are holding in divine mind, holding in consciousness, holding in the womb of what will be birthed through us eventually. So this faith-filled consciousness barely hesitates. When we're in that kind of space where we're strong in our faith, when we feel good about our faith, when we're standing in that place where we know what we know what we know, we barely hesitate when things happen or come to us. And we don't really put up resistance or argument or a lot of pushback in any way. And if you think about Mary, that's pretty incredible. She's a young woman. She's got to be a little fearful, concerned about her reputation. She has to be concerned probably about this future marriage to an older man who maybe she barely knows. She might have some fears about and doubts about this, what she's being told, that she's going to birth this boy onto the earth that's going to change lives and transform people and be this big spiritual teacher. And that's a lot to take in for anyone. And yet she accepts the news and she determines the next right action to take. And she really shows us what you do when you are somebody who has developed your faith in such a way that you accept what comes, whatever comes, as it comes, accepting, and by accepting, I don't just mean conditions of life. That's a different thing, kind of acceptance, but that's there too. But we're really talking about accepting the guidance, the mystery, the spiritual things that happen that we might otherwise doubt. And then saying, okay, what's my next right action? And then her next right action is a very human thing. She goes to her cousin Elizabeth to hang out, to take refuge, to be connected, to feel supported. And so that time then what tells us or asks us, you know, if we're looking at Mary and her story as ours, which is the way that we look at the metaphysics of it, what wants to come through us? And are you, what wants to come through you? And are you willing to accept it? Whatever is coming to you these days spiritually, are you willing to accept that as sort of your marching orders, if you will, and to take the next determined step, the next right step, to be willing to do what it takes to bring it forth, to carry it, to let it gestate into the time it will be manifested? So Elizabeth, then, is receiving Mary, right? So Mary comes to her house, and Elizabeth's name means the oath of God, or God's oath, or covenant, or fullness. And so while Elizabeth is also pretty shocked at the news that she's pregnant, she's also willing to accept it. She's also willing to meet the situation with gratitude. It's a dream, a lost dream. It's like we could think about that in terms of our lives. There are times when we had a dream for decades, right? When we were younger, and we gave up on it, or our desire changed. But sometimes that thing comes back around. Have you noticed that? The thing that you were guided to do or asked to do or given or shown, it comes back around later. And that's, in a way, what we're seeing with Elizabeth is this lost dream coming back and saying, okay, well, it's arrived. It's kind of late, I think, but I'm glad it's here because here it is. The miracle is happening. And so I'm going to greet it with a willingness. But this is really a key thing that Elizabeth's story tells us about this idea of embodiment. So Mary shows up, and Elizabeth says, I felt the baby leap in my womb. And so, you know, anybody, any woman who's been pregnant before has felt that before in some way. But she's talking about something very specific that happened in a very specific moment. She's saying when Mary came, that it's like I intuitively knew that Mary was also pregnant. And the baby in my womb leapt as if it were greeting the baby in her womb, making it even clearer that the prophecy that is being talked about, that John will be this forerunner of Jesus, all the more true. So it's that piece that is such a key. We often talk about intuition in terms of wisdom, but what about faith? What about faith? Because that is embodied faith. When we feel that guidance, when we feel that sense, when we have a sensation in our bodies, do we trust it? Do you trust it? When your knees are aching, do you ever say, knees, what do you need? You know, do you ever go in and ask them? Because you know what? They will tell you if you listen. Because we have wisdom all through our body, in the cells of our body. Spirituality has been taught to us for so long as something that's just up there and out there. But up there and out there, which is great, up there and out there is a part of the mystery and the wonder. But until it is in here and down here, we don't really get to live it, to hold it, to feel it, to experience it, to carry it, to birth it, to know it, to be a part of it in our words and our action and our days and our relationships and our creativity. Faith is available in all of those ways, but not until we let it in, till we breathe it in, till we're willing to be, if you will, impregnated with the Spirit. Male or female, it does not matter, right? Or anything in between. We're talking about a spiritual experience. It's like when Teresa of Avila was penetrated by the arrow of the angel. It was this wild visionary or maybe real experience. I don't know. Sometimes I can't tell the difference anymore between myth and reality. And I love that. Don't you? As we begin to play more in the fantasy of whatever is possible in the invisible realm, it becomes more and more real. And faith is a part of that. Faith is that bridge that says from the invisible to the visible. And faith is that part of us that says, I feel it in my body. I have a sense of knowing in the cells of my being. I know something to be true. And I'm not going to let my mind, and not that the mind is a bad thing, not that the brain is a bad thing. We put so much emphasis on it. And so it is more something that we want to put in service to the spirit. In service to the guidance, as wild as it may seem, as astonishing as it might be, to allow it in, to accept it, to be willing. I think that's what the Christmas story in this part of it is trying to show us. These characters are trying to show us the most wild thing you could imagine spirit would ask you to do, the most wild thing that could happen, that an angel appears at your bedside and begins to speak to you and tell you what it is that is yours to do. Whatever it is for you that you think, yeah, that's probably not going to happen to me. Open your mind and imagine, what if it did? Would you just shut it down? Would you just, you know, because the power of faith would say, oh no, take that in, let that in, let it into your body, feel it, see what you think. There's some wisdom there. There's something for you there. And Mary and Elizabeth and later Zechariah all show us how to really allow it in, let it in. So, Are you listening? Are you paying attention to what's happening inside of you? It doesn't have to be some great visionary, wild ride of an experience. It can be a simple, subtle kind of message that you get. And those simple, subtle messages come in all kinds of ways, right? It's the music we hear on the radio. It's something somebody says. It's everyday life. Everyday moments, it's the way the sun catches something and suddenly gets your attention and brings you to a memory. And then suddenly you're wondering why you're thinking about that. And then a friend calls who's connected to that. And it's like, wow, this is all connected. It really is. We really are one like we say we are. And faith is this elixir that keeps giving and giving and giving and deepening and deepening and deepening us in our walk. So grounding in our bodies, you know, you can do it in simple ways. I remember Wayne Dyer used to try to teach his kids to eat healthy things. And one of the ways he did it was through muscle testing. So he tells a story this one time where he gives his son, there's two bananas, one's organic, one's not. He gives his son one of the bananas, his son doesn't know which one, and he does muscle testing. And when he's holding the organic banana, his body's really strong. When he's given the other banana, his body is weak, right? Have you seen that muscle testing before where one holds and you resist? And then, yeah, it's really pretty amazing how that works. And so it's that kind of, there's another example of how we trust the body, how we trust the body to tell us what it needs, what it wants, so it can serve us in new and exciting and rewarding and healthy ways for our well-being. So when we're grounded in our bodies, we awaken these other faculties, like the wisdom that we spoke of earlier, or the second brain that we sometimes say the body has in the solar plexus. And it gives us a kind of calm confidence when we have a more embodied sense of faith. So then when difficulties come our way, we can meet them with a kind of a calmer, more grounded. That's what grounded faith looks like. It's a kind of not easily rattled, not easily thrown into the wind by the winds of life, more like a swaying tree that's strong and rooted in truth. And it's also that piece that helps manifest, envision, dream, hold that space for what can come. It's how Mary and Elizabeth moved with the news in that kind of very grounded way. When our spirit is grounded in faith and embodied, we live and move and have our being in these ways. We become bringers of heaven to earth. We become bearers of light in more expanded ways because we're not worrying about everything or being anxious about everything in the physical world. And so instead, we're meeting the things of the physical world with a spiritual understanding, with a powerful sense of faith. So in Egypt, I was in Egypt earlier this year, I told some of you, during sabbatical, and I saw these images and got introduced to the goddess Nut for the first time. Do you know her? Familiar with her? I took a picture, and it's not a great picture, but I'll explain to you what's going on, because the goddess Nut is you see those long, almost serpent-like raising up, and then two heads, that's her. And in both depictions. And then her body just kind of snakes around all over the ceiling of these tombs of the pharaohs. And so the story of the goddess Nut is like when we say, I have faith that the sun is going to rise and set every day, right? There are some things we just have a kind of innate faith. And so the Egyptians have the goddess Nut to ensure that that happens. And what happens is that it's said that at sunset, she swallows the sun. And then it moves through her body through the night. Some of the depictions have stars along with the sun. So you see those red dots all the way down. That's the sun moving through her body, and it goes all over the room. And then it comes back up the other side, facing the other way. And at sunrise, she births the sun. Isn't that beautiful? So this idea that that the light comes in, the faith, the illumination, the light comes in, and then the light is shared. So I like to swim, and this time of year it's really nice because usually when I swim the sun is kind of low, and every time I breathe on one side, you know, your mouth is really open, right, to breathe, and the sun is always right there, and I think, oh, I'm like the goddess Nut. I'm like swallowing the sun. Every time I'm on the left side, I'm swallowing the sun. And it just sort of uplifts my whole experience, because then it's like I'm feeling into what it feels like to be this magical, mythical goddess, right? And I'm thinking about then, what will I birth tomorrow? What light will come forth tomorrow? What light can I cast upon the earth to help each other, to serve in some way, to help myself? So I think these ancient Egyptians and Hinduism, the religions that have the gods and goddesses are really brilliant, because they're not necessarily saying there's not one source. They're just saying there are many faces, there are many embodiments, there are many ways to see how the god goddess shows up. And when we are given these, they become things that we can grab onto and imagine being ourselves. And it lifts us up to higher ground, to new ways of seeing and being. To bring it back to earth, it makes me think of this woman, I'm going to call her Cheryl, from my former congregation. Cheryl was known for the light she cast, the light that she cast to raise consciousness around people like her that were wheelchair bound in our city, and where we needed greater equitable accessibility in the parks and the buildings around town and so on. And she was really effective in raising her voice and getting things to change. And so a lot of people knew Cheryl because of this. They knew her by the light of day. They knew her by the sunrise of what she was to offer. And yet, it wasn't until I officiated at her celebration of life that I realized that there was another side to her that was like the goddess Nut as well. And maybe gave a window into the fuel for all that light that she would cast. See, Cheryl loved to watch the sunset. It was her sacred practice. She would find a place to watch the sunset in that kind of beautiful way that we do maybe when we're on vacation at the beach, you know, and we really take the time to, like, it becomes an event to watch the sunset. And for Cheryl, it was a daily spiritual event to watch the sunset. And so to take in that light and then birth that light, is one of the many ways we can walk upon this earth, giving over the good, sharing the good, taking it in and bringing it out. So expanding our faith through the embodied possibilities, maybe even the traits of a god or goddess, will be fun for you. I think it makes it more fun and spreads more joy. So we might think of faith as this like transcendent quality that's in the crown of the head, and that's part of it. But specifically in Unity's teachings, the power of faith is in the pineal gland. And the pineal gland oversees circadian rhythms. So rest, darkness and light, rest and action. These kinds of pairings are a part of that pineal gland that holds these possibilities in place. Things like silence and expression as well. So maybe there's something that is longing to come forth into your spiritual understanding, and you'll follow the rhythms as you're guided, as our friends were in the Christmas story. Each of these characters plays in the mystery and the miracle of birth and faith and possibility, and they also bring it to earth for us. In Zechariah's case, it's part of the way he embodies is through ritual. And if he is you know, fully present to the ritual, and we can do this in our lives too, when we are fully present to the ritual and the routines of our days, we cultivate these qualities through us and as us through those actions. So when their son is finally born, Elizabeth exclaims that his name is John. And all the townspeople are standing around and they're confused by this. What? No way. There's no way he's not. This is our priest. His name's going to be Zechariah. That's always what we do. We always name the son after the father. Why wouldn't we name him Zechariah? And so they look to Zechariah and they say, what? What's going on? You know, now they're accustomed to hand signals with him. And he takes a piece of paper and he writes, his name is John. And then he speaks. And he can speak forevermore because he's testified now to his faith. He's publicly acknowledged his faith. He's allowed his faith to express through him. And that's what happens for us. We go in the silence, we follow these rhythms, our circadian rhythms, and then we come out and we express at the right time. Speaking the truth, embodying the truth, that's a walk of faith. So wherever you are on this journey, I hope you'll consider what's brewing, what's gestating, what is coming into you. What kind of light will you hold and carry and birth in the coming weeks, especially as we truly rebirth at Christmas time the Christ consciousness in us? So I invite you to affirm with me on this fabulous journey. This time, this week, in earthy faith, embodied faith. Together, spiritually centered and attuned to my intuition and body, I am grounded in faith. And so it is.